Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez, proudly Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm getting worse at this. Proudly brought to you by LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged 707 Walnut in Philadelphia, always at llpavorsky.com.
I want to do that one time.
Do you want to do it now?
No.
Okay.
One of these days.
One of these days. You'll just surprise me with it.
Yeah, it'll be – you'll press play and then I'll just start saying the things you normally say.
I'm Spike Eskin along with Adnan Syed's lawyer for the retrial, Mike Levin.
Hi, yeah. Mike. Yeah. Well, I've been on two comedy lawyer shows, so I figured that's good enough.
Yeah. You learned a lot from Rob Lowe's performance in the Grinder.
Yeah, a ton. A real ton. We actually on Grinder did zero actual law stuff, like consulting, nothing. Now on Trial and Error, we have an actual legal consultant, which is pretty cool. So at least we're going to be a little bit more official in that regard.
Well, then, and you can ask for tips for your defense of.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to help.
All right, please. The podcast, as always, is available on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play and your favorite podcast app by just using the RSS feed. I know a lot of people put their podcasts on SoundCloud. It just costs more money for me. So if you really like listening on SoundCloud for some reason, please let me know. Otherwise, it seems like we have plenty of ways to listen. You can like us on our brand new Facebook page run by our only intern, Kristen. She runs the Facebook page. Our employee, Philip, who is our director of research and in charge of audience acquisition, he runs the Twitter. Philip has said we can only read one iTunes review per episode, so I picked a doozy here. Now, this person does not sign his actual name. He gives it 5 stars. His handle is Atomic Ruckus. And if you do enough internet searching, you might be able to find out who you think this might be. 5 stars, subject line, unlistenable. A while back, I was unloading groceries and a brick of cheese fell out of the bag without my noticing. It landed on a dark flagstone paver in front of my house and lay there out in the sun until I noticed it the next day. By the time I found it and started cleaning it up, the cheese had gone bad and attracted rats and bugs, which had eaten about half of the stinking, melted, sun-bleached mess off the stone. Shooing away the animals and cleaning up the mess was one of the most disgusting experiences of my life, perhaps the most disgusting, until I listened to this podcast. In short, this podcast makes me want to vomit even more the time that I drew the rats to the Rocky Sun cheese. 5 stars.
That's right.
5 stars. 5 stars. That's all that matters to me. All that.
5 stars.
Scoreboard, baby.
Scoreboard, exactly.
All right. On today's show, we will wrap up Summer League. We will, of course, talk about the most important move in Sixers this week. That is the trade of Chuchu Madiobom. We'll also talk about Dario Saric getting in town. And what else do I have here? The Manu Ginobili stuff. We'll have to talk about that. We'll say farewell to Christian Wood. We will, as promised, talk about Serial and the fact that Adnan Syed's going to get a new trial. If you're a longtime Ricky listener, you'll know I listened to Serial about a year after it came out, and we talked about it then. So we have to talk about Serial. Jahlil Okafor's Twitter comments about being traded. Talk about, there have been some questions about bringing back an old Ricky segment that I'll throw at you later. So we'll have that as well. If you don't mind, before we get to Dario, could I have one real life take about life? Would you mind, or do you not have time?
I'm ready for it.
Okay. So last night, Val and I enjoy going to the movies. I enjoy going to the movies, except that there's a lot of things about the movies that drive me nuts. But I like the idea and process of going to the movies. And because I saw what happened to the music industry and how it got sort of crushed, I like supporting, you know, I'm not a big, like, media stealer. Like, I don't steal, you know, movies or anything on the internet. I try to pay for it. So I like going to the movies. So we went to see The Conjuring 2 last night, which was pretty good if you like scary movies. Not too much different than The Conjuring 1, but whatever. Let me throw some things out there. If you're going to go to the movies, some basic rules that I think everyone should adhere to, just as a matter of common decency, given that the movies are not cheap. You know, if you're buying two tickets and a couple of snacks, you're talking about a $50 night for two people, right? First of all, the texting in movies has to stop. It's unacceptable. Forgetting about talking, and we all know talking is unacceptable, but texting in movies, once you bring up your phone and it attracts my eye, I cannot stop focusing on you or hating you or waiting for you to do it again. If it's an emergency, leave the theater, but it's really distracting. Second thing, I know you're very tough and you're not scared at the horror movie, but do not laugh at the scary parts of the horror movie really loud just to show.
I don't know. That's what you get for going to a horror movie in the theater.
No, but this is a real horror movie. This is not like, I don't know, this is not like an absurd horror movie. It's an actual horror movie. You shouldn't laugh really loud over and over again. I get it. You're not scared, but there's no way you find it laugh out loud funny. I mean, how many times do you really have to laugh out loud at anything, much less a horror movie?
I'm just so anti-horror.
Oh, okay.
Well, actually, like popcorn horror, I think it's trash, but
it's fine. I think The Conjuring is slightly above popcorn horror, isn't it?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Popcorn horror I would put as like, you know, just for historical references, but Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, blah, 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 you know.
Well, they're like the
evil.
The old ones who like started the genre.
Yeah.
But it feels like they just come out with like movies they make for like $500,000 and people see it because horror movies, people just go see horror movies.
Right.
Regardless of like taste or anything, they just want to be scared.
Yeah, I think The Conjuring's a little better, but whatever. Here's another thing, and this isn't just for horror movies, and this is actually the last thing. I love assigned seating at the movies. It means I don't have to get there 45 minutes early. It means I don't have to ask anyone to move. Do not sit in a different seat than you are assigned, because that means that I have to sit in a different seat than I'm assigned. And if that person comes, it's like a chain reaction. I know all four of you wanted to sit together, but the fact that you bought tickets late and were unable to get four tickets together is not my fucking problem.
Those all seem like reasonable takes. That seems like a symptom of going to see a horror movie in the theater.
No, The Conjuring. These were old ladies sitting in my seat.
Oh, well, okay.
Yeah.
The old ladies were also laughing very loud.
No, the old lady. Wait. The old ladies, they were sitting in the wrong seats, and they gave me like this, oh, we were hoping that you could just move one down. It's like, you know what? No, 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 no. So they get up and they move away. And it's not that I'm attached to the seat.
I love stonewalling old ladies.
Well, it's not that I'm attached to the seat. It's that
The Conjuring too.
I don't want to go. I don't want to have this conversation with whoever seat I'm sitting in because you sat. So they get up, and then every person that tells them to move, they give them the same rap, really loud and really surprised. It's got a row and a seat on it. There's 25 seats in the fucking theater. Okay, that's all I'm done. Just if everyone could just act like a grown-up, normal person in the movies, I would be thrilled. Thrilled, Mike.
You want those old ladies to act more grown-up?
Yes, act like your age. Okay. You shouldn't even be out. It's 8 o'clock at night. Okay.
Sure.
All right. Dario, you want to start with Dario?
Got to.
Well, I mean, it was great. I don't know what to say.
You know what to say.
What?
I mean, what the fuck with your dad, man? And no, everybody, not just your dad.
Yeah, you know what? I think I need you to stop focusing on like that he's the only fucking
person. Well, you're
close.
You're close to him, so I have to say it's easier
that's
to do.
Fine, but there's the entire Philadelphia.
Him, Marquez, not so much Tom Moore. Tom Moore.
Tom Moore participates. Let's say
a little, but he's a pleasant man.
Yes,
he doesn't just like, hey, this is what I reported, and this is not what I want.
Right, but then there's Brian Getzeiler, and there's all like Hoops.
Oh, he still says stuff. I blocked him a long time ago.
Yes,
what's he
there's a lot. Like, if we're gonna just have a conversation about my dad, like he's on the radio 2 hours a week on Saturday mornings. Like, if you cannot avoid here's what I would say just about everybody whose idea, like who said that he wasn't going to come over and so on and so forth, is that like, I guess my thing is that if they're going to continue to argue about it, most notably actually Marcus Hayes in this instance, because he was saying, you know, if it wasn't for the Turkish revolution, like it wouldn't have happened. And by the way, even if that was a factor in it, then fucking fine. Who cares? You know, like.
Well, I think it was him saying like, oh, well, the only reason that Sam Hinkie was right and we were all right is because there happened to be a Turkish coup. That right. So that clearly was part of the plan, he says, like, dismissively.
Sarcastically. Yeah. Well, you know, I think part of the plan is it's better playing basketball here than it is playing basketball in Turkey. You know what I mean? Like, this is a I think it's part of the allure. That's part of why he was coming over here in the first place, was to play in the NBA. Well,
he signed a contract before the draft with an opt-out, a buyout after 2 years. He said all along, at no point did he not say this, I'm coming after 2 years. I'm coming after 2 years. Hinkie was like, hopefully he's coming after 2 years. Colangelo was like, hopefully he's coming after 2 years. Brett Brown, we're hoping he comes after 2 years.
Well, let's not also pretend like they didn't try to get him last year.
Of course, they tried. Okay. But it was all – this was like the idea was the buyout after 2 years is when he would come by.
Right.
But then just because – I mean, it's your dad did say, who knows with this guy?
And
it's
but a lot of people said that. Please stop with the focusing on who they – can I ask you honestly?
Sure.
Why do you give a fuck in the world? Like, all my dad does is an Eagles sideline reporter, does a two-hour show on Saturday mornings, and is how does he even affect you? Like, he doesn't even
– I'm bringing up because he's your dad. If Andrew Sharp said shit, there's other reporters that say shit, but he was my roommate, so we talk about him.
No, but I didn't talk about Andrew Sharp because he was your roommate. I talked about him because he was on a Grantland podcast. Like, that was my connection to Andrew Sharp. Now, he ended up at the lottery party because he was your roommate, but that was it. Like, I'm just not going to have an hour conversation about what my dad thinks. Like, this is it's a little frustrating in that like the person arguing about it on Twitter, all like the two guys were Marcus Hayes and Hoops Critic. All this week.
What did Hoops Critic say?
Well, it was the same thing. It was the old tweets that were brought up, and then he managed to get in angry Twitter arguments with everybody the whole time,
which is always fun. He's very good at going right to drawing people out for pre-retweet Armageddon.
Yeah, like I guess what I would say about him, the only thing that and in fairness to him, he's been nice to me since the I would say the peak of the war, which was probably 6 or 8 months ago. But he when he argues with people on Twitter, he really
gets into it.
Yes, really, really loves to call when the argument is over. Say,
yeah, well,
done with
I'm
you.
Done I'm done here. Yeah. Why doesn't he just not respond? I mean, once in a while, I get trapped, and I think you do also, is just get trapped in an argument that you don't want to be in.
Yes.
And you just like go off on somebody because it's a bad day or whatever. But like, it seems like that's all his Twitter is based on. It's like if Woj just like argued with people all day long. Like, it's like, don't you have other stuff that you should be doing? Or is this your whole brand? Just like arguing with random people on Twitter.
Well, and I guess I would also say it would go a lot quicker if it was just – this is for all of them. This goes for my dad. It goes for Marcus Hayes. It goes for Hoops Critic. If you would just sort of say, there's been plenty of times during this whole thing, like, you were wrong on this one. You know what I mean? Like,
how hard is it to say that?
Yeah. You know what? I didn't think he would come over. You know, I just – it was one
– Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for the Sixers.
Yep.
Like, that's cool. Like, I hope he's good because it'll make the team more fun to cover. Instead, it's – and this was the case with Hinkie also. They were rooting for him to fail because they – I mean, I guess it's baked into it because Sarek is part of the Hinkie equation. But they don't want it to happen so they can prove their own, like, shitty biases right. And I guess that was, you know, we were sort of the case with that in terms of pre-Hinkie wanting Collins' stuff to blow up in his face.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's different because there's – I don't know. We won't get into the argument.
Well, and what their whole thing was based upon – and this just goes back to everything that Sam did in the first place. And Saric coming over was – well, obviously – like, there are so many things that are attached to Sam Hinkie on this team. Everything, essentially, this team.
And forever.
And forever. But there were so many things where they – like, that showed a fundamental misunderstanding of what he was doing, where they would say, well – you never – because everything was – it was like the false risk false risk assessment of it, where they go, well, you never really know if he's going to come over. You don't know if Joel Embiid is.
You don't know if they're going to win the lottery. You don't know if the draft is a crapshoot. Is just like the easiest thing to say in the world.
Right. But what they never really acknowledged was that you never know also means that it might turn out well too. So Hinkie's whole thing was, I know that I'll never know. That's why I'm taking lots of chances. You know what I mean? So, and it just, you know, he took some chances that didn't work, but that was also by, you know, no one wants to fail, but by design. But Saric is here, and now they
get, well, big ups to Seamus and, was it Jim Adair? Seamus and Jim Adair?
Yeah, Seamus for stalking at the airport.
That's great. I love it. Well, I mean, I feel really happy for Seamus. His whole personality was riding on this happening. Yes. So
you sort of wonder if I hope he wasn't. He had to have been sweating out the last year. Like, he had to have.
I think he's been sweating for a long time.
So here's my question with Dario is that, and this is, I think, fair to ask, is that we've been, and this is for a lot of things, actually, this is for Embiid too, for different reasons, but we've been waiting for so long, and it almost feels as though, you know, the celebration when he came over, and I think he was obviously taken aback by it, and he said he didn't expect for there to be people at the airport waiting for him.
Yeah, he needs to be on Twitter. He needs, like Choo Choo knows how much he's loved.
Yes.
Saric is in on Twitter, so he doesn't know.
Yeah. The Choo Choo thing we'll get to later. But he definitely, he was definitely honest when he was tweeting about leaving.
Oh, 100%. Choo Choo, really, we really showered him with some love.
So are we setting Saric up? I guess we've done this for everything because we've been waiting for so long. But are we setting up for him to disappoint given the reaction that we had when he arrived, I guess?
I don't think so. I think especially now that he plays essentially the same position as Ben Simmons, I think, and because of the way Dario's improved as a three-point shooter, they can play together a little bit. I don't know that you want necessarily to play them next to each other all the time. But I think, you know, Dario will come off the bench and he'll, you know, take the load off people and just, I think if we drafted Ingram, it would be assuming that, like, Saric could play next to him a little bit and start right away. And he's 22 already. 22, right? I think it's 22. Not run the offense, but be a real integral part. I think this way, this is easing him in. And he's played against grown men before, so it's not like Luau has to, like, really build out his body. But Saric is there. He's just going to improve. I've been cool on Saric for at least a little bit.
Yep. I feel like didn't you sort of turn recently with the shooting?
Shooting especially, and the motor on defense. I still think he's a little slow. Just watching him, I think that there's a quickness element that I don't think he moves his feet super well. And I think his first step is kind of slow, but now that he's got the shot to set it up, he's such a good passer and he's a smart player that I'm really excited to see what, I mean, the Sixers team is going to be so good at passing it all of a sudden with Sergio and Ben and Embiid even, and regardless of Okafor and Noel, whoever's here, Nerlens is already a good passer. Jahlil should be a good passer based on what he did in college and in high school. It's going to be a good passing team, which is going to be fun to watch and fun for Brett to play around with. So, I don't know. I don't think Saric's role on the team will be big enough right away to where he will have an opportunity to disappoint so much based on how he performed overseas. Do you?
Well, I mean, he said, I think his agent said that he's expecting to play 25 or 30 minutes a game, and I think
25 is great. I do.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot of time. You know, that's.
Yeah, you're right. That's right.
You know, I just think in general, I think one of the things, and the Sixers will be a part of this too, and I'm sort of cautioning against it and hoping people remember it, is people say a lot of times about shitty teams with interesting young pieces about how fun the team will be. I mean, people talk about that with league pass teams.
You're anti-fun. Anti-calling things fun.
Only because I think people forget that when they're talking about a team like that being fun, is that most of the time when you watch them, they're going to be shitty. You know, it's like there will be moments and they'll be great for highlights, but I think you'll forget that most of the time the quote-unquote fun teams are going to be probably most of the time shitty. And the Sixers are going to have moments this year, and I think it's going to look a lot better than we've seen in the previous 3 years. But most of the time they're three of their most important pieces in Embiid and Simmons and Saric are all flawed in their own ways and rookies. So they're going to be bad, you know? So that's all I would caution against. And I'm actually really looking forward to seeing, you know, the Sixers are so big that it gives them the ability to, I mentioned last week, a lineup with Simmons as sort of a small ball center. And I imagine a world in which you can play a lineup with Saric and Simmons where they are the four and the five. You know?
I would love to see that.
You know, with Covington at three and whoever, Thompson at two and Bayless at the one. I mean, or that makes for a, or even TJ at the one or something like that and Bayless at the two. I think it makes for an interesting small ball team, and I think it gives them the ability to go big small, you know? Yeah. And I think it's exciting. I'm looking forward to preseason just to see them all on the court. You know, so
do you think Carl Landry starts the year on the team?
I do. Well, I think the advantage to Landry, I think the advantage that he gives them is that in an Okafor trade, there's extra salary there that they can mm-hmm. give up if they need to. So actually, I think it's probably likely that he gets included in a trade with
Nerlens Noel Noel.
I think so. Yeah. So and just to go back, and I was probably more rough on you than I should have been. So let me, my father, he and a lot of other people really, really, really attached their anchor to this is not going to work.
Right.
And you know what? It hasn't worked yet. But I, and this is why I want to hold off on retweet Armageddon. And a lot of people have asked about it because there's still opportunity for other bad things to happen that we said, you know, so don't, because then you are the one retweeted. You don't want to be on the wrong side of Armageddon.
Oh yeah. We could easily get retweet Armageddon.
Right. So what I would say is they all attach themselves to this ship. And if you were to ask me, if you look into the distance, this ship that they're all, this anti-Hinky ship that they've all decided to hop onto, there's an iceberg in the distance and it's on a straight line toward it. And just let it fucking go into the iceberg. Just everyone, just quietly, don't warn them. Just let them, because if you let them go, people like what Marcus Hayes did, it's just giving us more. And just don't allow yourself. I feel like I've said many times, Sixers fans are like the most easily trolled fans on the internet right now. And they
we got a lot of juice. We're hopped up on juice.
Yeah. And Marcus Hayes was like either just doesn't know what he's talking about or is just pulling off a troll job. So I would just say just allow them to speed their boat up into the iceberg, and it will be more glorious for all of us when it runs right into them. Because they made a mistake. They were all very stupid and angry.
And it's not one mistake.
Yes.
Let's not say they made one mistake. They made years of mistakes.
Yes, I would agree.
In association with their job and how they approach their career. And, I mean, look, we've said this 100 times, but Hoop76, their Twitter account, always posts a list of assets that the Sixers around the league. They do. It's really, I really enjoy it a lot. But they post a list of assets like ranked basically for each team. And they have very frequently posted Hinkie's inheritance, what he had when they came over, when he started, which is really bad. Like really, really, really bad. And it's important to remember how bad it was.
Yeah.
And then you look at it now and it's like, well, yeah. It's a lot better. He made them over the course of 3 years much, much better. I think everyone's still just like harping over the like lost time that they had, but that's over. It's in the past. We got through it. It was like a dark period, but now we're on the other side and it's great. You can say, hey, I didn't like watching them lose all the time. I thought that it was shitty and boring or a waste of my time. And you'd be right. But you can also come out on the other side and say, I appreciate what Sam did. I appreciate what the owners let Sam do until they stopped letting him do it. And now we're set up in a really good situation with, after one or two Nerlens or Jahlil trades for a guard or a wing or a point guard or a future pick, whatever, then they're just totally loaded up to be a legitimate contender for years to come. You can say that, but people aren't saying that. They're saying he was dumb. He was still dumb. It was all dumb. He didn't know what he was doing. They got lucky. Like, all the stuff. And are they going to try to rationalize that for the rest of their lives? And that'll be something that they have to do to make to help them sleep at night.
Well, and here's two things. First, yeah, you can say that the last 3 years, and you can even say that, wow, look, it looks like he did put the organization in a better position to win, but I really thought that the last 3 years could have been operated in a manner that wasn't as blatant, and maybe it would have lowered our chances of being in the same exact position, but maybe the NBA wouldn't have come after us in that case. And that's all true as well. Like, there's, yeah, you know, there are different levels to this. And the, you know, the other thing is that, you know, if you are going to Skip Bayless is like a model in doing this. And one of the things that you have to do is just be willing to, if you're going to go, you know, a lot of local people took what they were doing very personally, it seemed like. And even, I think, really good writers and broadcasters in town took it really personally. If you're going to have it that hardline stance on it, the great thing about Bayless is that he just moves on to the next thing and just keeps going. Just don't harp on, just let it go, this one, I would say. Just let it. Just sort of
you're talking to the local Baylesses.
Well, just that if you were that part of having that hard line of stance on something is realizing that you're either going to be right or wrong. Like, and with a lot of them, there's going to be wrong ones. You know, just at this point, I feel like it is silly to keep harping on that you were right, because you probably weren't right. You know, yeah. It's just let it go. Move on. That's all I would say.
I think that there's on the other side, and maybe there's some of this on our side also, but I think we have a measured look at things. Like, when he picked Okafor, we thought it was a bad idea. We weren't blindly supporting everything. It was, hey, I don't necessarily agree with this. But I think that there was on the other side always, this is dumb, you're stupid, like, he didn't do anything good. Even like the Stauskas trade was like, whatever, nothing, not going to, it's never going to convey, like, all the stuff. It's just, it's such a hard line on it. And you're right. It became personal. And I think the process, for better or for worse, for everyone became personal. Not even just people in Philadelphia, like mainstream people around the league, like, took it as an affront to them and their childhoods and what they believed in. And,
and you know, Adam Silver has done a good job since he's been in there as, you know, commissioner, it seems like. And I think he ultimately answers to the owners. And if the owners wanted him to do something, the people forget that about commissioners when they're ripping Goodell or they're ripping anybody. The commissioner,
they work for the owners.
What's it? Yeah, they work for the owners. That's their only job, to make the owners happy, really. Yeah. I mean, they want the sport to be healthy, but ultimately so they can make more money. But I can't believe we're talking about this again, but the owners collapsing, the Sixers owners collapsing, and I'm not surprised that they did, because why do you want to take on the rest of the owners? It's probably not worth it in the long run. But the owners collapsing and Silver doing what he did because he was afraid it was going to work, is the whole thing, the whole way that this ended was so dirty. Yeah. And we're never, ever, ever going to let anyone forget it. And
if
Yeah, like, this is never going to be a dead thing to me, ever, ever, ever. And I hope I was looking at Instagram this morning, and one of our more dedicated listeners, a guy named Alonzo, who was getting Alonzo's getting married in a week. So, you know, congratulations, Alonzo. But there was a video of his bachelor party, and he was wearing the one part courage, two part patience t-shirt at his bachelor party. We're never going to stop wearing the shirts. Like, it'll never be. This is never going away. And I just,
yeah, there's a guy at Summer League wearing the shirt.
Yes, there's a guy at Summer League. There's Warren Croxton, another regular listener, was on. It was at the Phillies game last night and was on TV carrying like it looked like he was carrying concessions to his seat wearing the Hinkie shirt. We're never, this is always going to be our moment. This moment in time is ours, and we're never going to let you forget about it.
Did you see Sam was at Summer League talking to Rod Thorne?
Yes, I did. Wearing Jordans, by the way.
Yeah. Give me a take on that. What are Sam and Rod Thorne talking about?
LOL. Well, because remember, they were both unceremoniously sort of wiped away from Sixers running the Sixers, you know, by the same ownership, by the way, both Rod Thorne and Sam Hinkie.
That's right.
Right. Yeah, I mean, because Rod Thorne was running the team at some point. And really, it was that ambiguous time where you couldn't tell if it was Doug Collins or Rod Thorne. And they very much disagreed on Evan Turner, if I remember correctly. I don't know. Maybe they were just LOLing at losing their standing in the Sixers organization. I don't know.
And then the – what's the other Summer League? Whatever happened at Summer League. Oh, the Brian Colangelo was on the – I just called him Byron Colangelo.
Yeah, I like Colangelo so much more. Yeah.
He was on with Tom Penn and what's his name? The other guy for the Sixers Summer League.
Oh, the play-by-play. I don't remember.
Whoever his name is. And it was really rough. They were talking about how well-dressed he is – and how much success he's had and finally going to restore Philadelphia to some respectability. Did you listen to it? It was really tough to take.
No, I don't remember. It was during one of the games?
Yeah.
I don't remember it. I don't remember. Well, I mean, Tom Penn.
Mike Weber was texting me about it. So I watched it on DVR later, and he was like vomiting play-by-play to me about the conversation they were having.
Mike Weber, the Spike Lee of the Right to Ricky
Sanchez. Spike Lee of the Right to Ricky, yeah, exactly. And also, Weber told me, I didn't see it, but the Scott O'Neill was on something.
Scott O'Neill was actually, I believe, on the Sixers. Brian Seltzer was doing audio play-by-play of Sixers Summer League that was only on the stream, and I think that's where he was on.
That's where he was on, and then he said, last week I made fun of D'Angelo Russell for saying ice in his veins as if it's a trailer moment, saying that's going to leave a mark.
Right, right, right.
And Scott O'Neill said that's going to leave a mark that day that I said that on the podcast.
He literally said that's going to leave a mark?
He said that's going to leave a mark, yes.
And then he said, I'll be back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He laughed his head off. He thought it was really funny. One thing, and this is not political at all, but one thing that Ted Cruz did.
Oh, here we come. Liberal agenda.
He always there's always clips of him quoting movies and doing a whole run of movies and making people sit down and listen to him as he quotes his favorite movies. Very bizarre, very weird thing to do. People who just quote movies and think that that's the joke is you're being funny because you're saying a line from the movie. Very tough.
Ted Cruz
being that guy is very, very funny to me.
Yeah, well, the best Ted Cruz video is the one where he is talking about Trump and pointing at the camera and saying, "Don't you ever talk about my family?" It looks like it's
at SummerSlam.
Yeah, it looks like a wrestling promo.
Did you listen to one last thing before we get back into schedule? Did you listen to last week's Keeping It 1600?
Was last week's the one? Oh, wait, hold on. They had who was the guest that I listen every week? I didn't finish this week. Which one was last week's?
This week was the one where the VP pick broke
Mike
during
Prince.
Mike Pence.
So last week, yes.
Dan Pfeiffer made a Ben Simmons Summer League reference, which felt good.
Yeah, well, Dan Pfeiffer is from Delaware, and I believe at one point told me he grew up listening to
podcast.
WIP. Yeah. So I was noticing, I think three quarters of everyone who works at 538 is either from Philadelphia or has some sort of Philadelphia connection. Neil Payne is 538. Kate Fagan obviously has a connection. Micah, I don't know what Micah's last name is.
Is Kate Fagan at 538?
Well, she is often on Hot Takedown, which is a 538 podcast. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
All right. What do we got next? We got the choo-choo trade?
Well, no. So I felt like we should wrap up Summer League. Wait, let's talk about Lee, and then we'll have the rest of the podcast to do everything else. You want to do that?
Okay. I need at least 45 minutes on choo-choo.
Okay. But, yeah, of course. Well, so Lee is the only Lee that we're talking about, and that is LL Pivorsky Jewelers, the the lone sponsor of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. So LL gets back from Summer League, and of course the LL Pivorski Summer Cabana sale is going strong now. The deep discounts on just about everything. But think about, if you're going to buy an engagement ring, you want to buy one from a guy who got back from Summer League and immediately went to the basketball tournament game on Saturday. And that is LL Pivorski, who went to the Liberty Ballers basketball tournament game on Saturday. He's added something, by the way. So we've said that he's the guy that TTP, Trust the Pivorski, you're going to buy your engagement ring from him. For Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners only, if you get your engagement ring from Lee, he's going to pay for the first year of insurance on the engagement ring. That's going to be on him. I think he uses Jewelers Mutual, who I use. So that's just another thing. He just wants you to walk out of there feeling confident, knowing that if your fiance drops the ring and it gets run over by a tractor trailer, you are totally set. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to avoid buying an engagement ring or jewelry on some website that you don't know who is selling it to you. I want you to avoid going to a store in the mall where they're going to pressure you into buying it. And I want you to go to a guy like Lee, who's going to take his time with you. What you're going to do is you're going to make an appointment with Lee if you're going to buy the engagement ring, so he can set aside all the time in the world. You're going to send him an email. You call him at 215-627-2252, or just tweet him. He'll set up the appointment. You'll go to the store. It'll be you and LL, and that's it. Taking the time, going over every different option you have with the purchase. And then he's just going to let you think about it. No obligation whatsoever. And then you're going to buy the ring from him, and you're going to have a jeweler forever. LL Pivorski Jewelers, that's the dude. The store is at 707 Walnut, llpivorski.com. Again, you can tweet him at LL Pivorski. And as the official jeweler of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, LL makes generous donations to the Alzheimer's Association and RAIN for every podcast. LL Pivorski Jewelers.
Land the plane in style in a brand new necklace.
I like that one. There's got to be a Dario special, right? He has to have a Dario special going on.
That'd be cool.
Go see LL and ask him for the Dario special. I don't know what it is, but it'll be something.
He'll figure something out.
Summer League, we were talking before the podcast. I hate when people do that on TV shows, actually. We were talking about Summer League before the podcast, in that there was a little less drama, I thought, this year, in that there were fewer roster spots up for grabs. So a lot of it became, how does Ben Simmons look? I mean, Rashawn Holmes, Christian Wood, I think were probably both. Stauskas and Grant only played a couple of games. It was so unmemorable, I only remembered one. Grant played so-so in one and really poorly in one. Stauskas didn't look good in either of them. But it felt, my interest level aside from Ben Simmons was a little bit less. Once I could see that Ben Simmons was good, I was sort of less obsessive about it than I have been in previous years.
Yeah, I like the way TLC looked. I wasn't expecting too much more out of him. Maybe a little bit more. I want to see a little bit more bounce. But I think he just is, it was probably like a little nervous and unsure of himself, and his body's not there yet. But aside from that, it was good to see TJ.
TJ looked great.
Looked great. Haircut great. Just very controlled. I honestly went to sign TJ to a 10-year contract. 10 years, $60 million.
I think that's fair. I think that's
I would love it. Yep. Let's break the CBA just for that.
I mean, he's definitely going to be on the team, right? I mean,
I really, really think so. I think Brett really wants him. I think the two guys that Brett would be like, gimme, are TJ and either Hollis, probably Hollis, but I would also maybe add Jeremy there, because I think Brett really likes Jeremy also. But I don't know, because there's not that many roster spots. We already said Carl Landry. It's a pretty a desirable $6 million he's owed after Hal last year, so I think they could find a taker for him if they wanted to. Christian Wood, who was on the team last year, signed in Charlotte. Good for him. I take credit for it. He really didn't have a spot here anyway, so I wasn't like sad about it. I'm happy that he worked hard enough to become a good enough offensive player to where he was desirable.
Can we talk for a second about the weird congratulations message the Sixers sent out for Christian Wood? Yeah. I have no problem with it, and I guess it's a relationship thing, or but it was very strange in that Brian Colangelo had never, he wasn't even, Christian Wood wasn't even really part of the Sixers while he was here. You know, he's not under contract. Maybe he's a seven success story on some level, but it was, I've never seen that before.
That was bizarre.
Yeah.
I think they were trying to be like, look how nice we are to all players. We just want everyone to succeed. It was just weird. And it was like it was too short to like really be heartfelt or matter.
It was weird.
Not like he was like a scrappy underdog.
No.
Like who they like really worked on for years and years and then finally got a contract. It's just very bizarre. But
like that's the one that you give Hollis, right? If Hollis gets a deal somewhere, maybe he's been here for the 3 years. He's gotten right. I mean,
I don't want to think about it. I had a dream the other day that Hollis got traded, and I like it emotionally shook me. Hollis leaving would be very hard for me to take. But Christian Wood now fighting with Spencer Hawes for a roster spot. They're probably trying to move Hawes to make room for him. It's a weird world.
Yeah.
Strange world. But Christian Wood, I mean, I agree that we talked about it last week. Like, he's not as athletic as he is on paper. In watching the game, he's not as athletic as he, like, should be. And he looks very confused on defense. I don't think he is quick enough or smart enough to play the four because I don't think you want him, like, guarding anybody on the perimeter. But he's also not a great rim protector. He's a decent defensive rebounder in that he's better than Rashawn Holmes, but I don't know that. I just don't know what he's really good at. Like, he scored and he put up stats and, like, he did a couple things, but as people started liking Christian Wood more, I started liking him less. I think I like him worse.
Yeah, that's very you know, every once in a while when people call our group of people basketball, like, hipsters –
yeah.
And I rail against it, and then you say what you just said, and I go, oh, that's probably right.
Well, I think he was just putting up stats because he was there.
Yes, it's like D League. I said I watched his D League games. He looked terrible, and somehow he put up numbers. Yeah, I don't know.
So Christian's gone. I think Rashawn started rebounding a bit more as the week went on. He just doesn't put a body on guys. There was one play when he was standing next to another rebound. I forget what game it was, but he was standing next to somebody. The shot was up, and he's just like looking at it, and he's ready to go. When it comes down, I'm going to go get this ball. But he's not putting a body on anybody. I can't imagine Sixers development coaches aren't like, bro, shot goes up, find somebody, throw your ass into him. That's how you box out. He's just – his whole game plan is to outjump people, but because he's standing stationary under the basket and guys are coming – from the perimeter to get a rebound, they can outjump him because they can take a couple steps into it. So it's very bizarre. I don't know why he's so bad at it. I need to see like marked improvement this year. I could see him not making this team.
Yeah, because really it comes down to me. I know they play different positions, but I'd much rather take a chance on Jeremy Grant than Rashawn Holmes.
I agree. I was thinking about it while we were talking earlier. I think that Jeremy's best, especially with Dario and Simmons here, I think Jeremy's best situation would be as a small ball five. I think that he obviously plays some four, but he's long enough to be able to do stuff. He needs to be able to rebound better also. But if you're doing like a Simmons Jeremy front court, that's like good enough to where rebounding wise and rim protection wise, you can run it out there and just sort of mess with people in transition. So I agree. I think one of, you know, it's so hard to predict. I want to like talk about who's going to make this roster and who's not going to get in, but it's so hard without the Nerlens or Jahlil trade yet to say one way or the other.
Yeah. Because there will likely be somebody else included in that and you don't know who they're getting back. Yeah.
Yeah.
When I think about Rashawn Holmes, I want to like him, but my heart says yes, but my mind says that I don't know what his ceiling seems pretty low to me. I just can't figure out a way if the guy and he's already old, right?
This is Rashawn. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. He's already 20.
I don't know. I don't know. I agree. I think that the shot looks so ugly. The shot looks so it takes so long. There's like six hitches in it, but he can shoot a little, and so I think if he becomes a rim running rim protecting, offensive rebounding, guy who can step out a little bit. I think that that is valuable off the bench.
And as
like a mini Embiid, basically.
And we do, oh boy, and we do own the ad on his
very
basketball.
A very small Embiid, yeah. An incredibly small, barely visible Embiid.
And we do the Rice Ricky Sanchez does sponsor his basketball reference page. So
yeah, who
are
the official people that we sponsor the basketball reference pages?
Well, Christian Wood, which is hilarious. Rashawn Holmes, Jeremy Grant, Sergio Rodriguez.
Okay.
Yeah. The credit card was working pretty hot for me at one day. Yeah.
Look, you know, all valuable purchases.
Yeah.
All worthwhile.
So as we go from Summer League, so there are a couple of things. Well,
What's your last Simmons Summer League take?
Here's what I was actually talking. Who was I talking to about him yesterday or 2 days ago? I went to dinner with. I only have like three people I still talk to from high school, three of my friends, and we all went out to dinner the other night, and we were talking about Ben Simmons. And basically what it boiled down to is his combination of size and vision at this point leads me to believe it's almost impossible that he won't be good, because I just can't think of anyone who can pass like he can and sort of has that basketball intuitiveness with his size that has ever not been good. And I'm just like, I know, and he started shooting more. It was still sort of ugly, but started shooting more as Summer League went on. I am all in on Ben Simmons in that I don't think he can fail. I just think his floor is much higher than most people gave it credit for before.
I agree. I think, and that's because I think of how good he is at rebounding on defense.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
that is at least one legit NBA skill outside of his like elite, never before seen passing that he can just like hang his hat on. If he becomes a less athletic, better passing Giannis at this point in his career, then that's great. I think that you want it to be more, and I think Giannis will eventually grow into more stuff. But if he isn't on that level of just like he's a problem on defense, he's playing point guard, nobody can cover him, nobody knows what to do with him, he needs to work on his jump shot, he needs to work on his decision making, but he just becomes like this problem for defenses, then that's great. And I think that's floor like. And if the jumper is real, then he becomes this like ethereal player that no one's ever seen before.
Yeah, he's a monster. If the jumper ends up mostly legit, the league is in trouble. And it's funny you bring up Giannis, because everyone basketball Twitter is in love with Giannis, who, by the way, still can't shoot, you know, at all.
Yeah.
And I would say he's, and to your point, he's more athletic than Simmons, but he is nowhere near the passer that Simmons is. So
yeah.
So you're right. I think, you know, the reviews on Simmons have been, maybe I'm just looking for the ones that are critical, but I think have been mostly very good. But I don't see a way that he isn't a difference maker player in the NBA. I don't see how that happens.
I agree. I don't want to talk about this, but I was asked to. So I'll let us rip on Isaiah Thomas, the old player Isaiah Thomas, not the current player Isaiah Thomas, for saying that Ben Simmons should have, just ripping Ben Simmons for not playing in all of the Summer League games.
Well, I mean, Isaiah Thomas is a throw-in player. He is an all-star, a fake all-star. You know, like when Iggy made the all-star team that year, or Drew Holiday did. And I love Iggy to death, but it was because there was no one else there. Isaiah Thomas is a nice little player. And
no, I'm talking about the...
Oh, the old Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, the old
I thought
Isaiah.
It was the young Isaiah Thomas.
No. It's broadcaster.
Oh, well, I was ripping on regular Isaiah Thomas. Can I just keep doing that?
No.
Because I only saw the quotes from Isaiah Thomas. Oh, well, I mean, like, look, old NBA players are...
The worst.
Because they are so constantly in search of credit. And I don't know what it is, but no former athlete are like old NBA players in that they think that people do not give them enough credit. It's the strangest thing. So I don't know. Go sexually assault someone else, Isaiah Thomas. I mean,
did he sexually assault someone?
Yes, when he was with the Knicks. That's sort of why there was a whole, I think there was a whole lawsuit.
I didn't know. It makes me dislike him a lot more.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just like if you're an old player, and I think it's, if you're old really, but if you're an old player, like, just shut up. Like, no one needs your take. I know we can assume that you think that you were tougher back then, things were better, and, you know, a lot of, you know, all this hand-checking and defense, it wouldn't have been like that in your day. Yeah, we get it. Like, we know, and, you know, people use cell phones now, and, you know, women can vote. It's great. So I'm just totally fucking out on any old person having, like, a take about young guys these days. I hate everybody. I mean, that's why I can't watch Inside the NBA. I can't do any of it. It makes me so mad, so unfortunately mad, that once you retire in the NBA, I think you should have to die. Just go straight to retirement ceremony, straight to funeral.
Mike didn't mean that literally. I just want to get that out there that Mike doesn't.
No, you should be pressured to just go die.
I think the problem is that, like, you know, and you see it every time. I wouldn't have teamed up with so-and-so. Well, you never had the chance, you know? No one, you guys couldn't move around. You couldn't.
Yeah, free agency didn't exist for a lot of you guys.
Yeah, it was my favorite one is that so-and-so, this team, it was when they talked about the Warriors. If they had played 20 years ago, they would have, you know, when it was tougher. It's like, okay, well, but if the 93 Knicks, who were, you know, consistent challengers to the ring, were playing today, they couldn't compete today either. It's different eras. Everything's different. Stop. Just, if you're going to talk about today's NBA, they all do it too.
Everybody just has a microphone and they can say, obviously not everyone's bad. Malik Rose, Ala Abdelnaby, great guys. Yeah. Like them very much. But for the most part, people with a microphone or a Twitter account can just say shit and they feel like, hey, why is anybody talking about me anymore? It's the worst. Let's move on to the choo-choo trade. Please, God, I need closure.
So choo-choo Mathieu-Baum involved in a trade that essentially gets the Cavs some cap space. The Sixers traded, I don't even remember the name of the guy that they got in the Cavs.
Sasha Kahn.
And
let me rock you, Sasha Kahn.
And they will cut him, and it's the Sixers getting some cash and the Cavs getting some cap space. And choo-choo Mathieu-Baum is now gone. One of the most Sixers that was never a Sixer. And the best part of it, of course, was the fact that he said on Twitter that he, like, Sixers fans really made him feel wanted and he would really miss them, and retweeted and faved a bunch of Sixers fans saying goodbye to him. And it was just like the nicest thing ever. He said some tweets from choo-choo. When you type trust the process, what I really hear is may the force be with you. Like he is so aware, actually genuinely like the Sixers fan base. Don't make me say goodbye again. Tears emoji, tears emoji, tears emoji. Like, he is, right? I mean,
he's sad that he's going from the Sixers to the Cavs.
Even though he was never a Sixer. That's the best. But he was always a Sixer.
He's always a Sixer.
Here's another one. I'm in Nigeria. This was from June. Someone tell me if I end up getting traded again.
Sad. People ask if Sasha Kahn now goes on the t-shirt. T-shirt's over.
Yeah.
T-shirt. It was Sam's t-shirt, and so we can't do it anymore.
Well, what we should do is have a running just JPEG and start crossing people out when they're like, we should cross out everyone who isn't there anymore. Wait, there was one.
Yeah, that's
one.
A lot. That'll be a lot of crosses.
And choo choo like. Wait, I'm just trying to find. Oh, thanks for treating me like one of your own. People don't know how big or involved you guys are. Thanks for all the love, Philly. Heart. Like, that is unreal.
I love it. Yeah. We need Choo Choo as, like, team spokesman.
Yeah. Maybe he'll. I mean, he had promised that he would come on the podcast. Should I ask him again?
I don't know. I feel too bad. I would feel too bad about all the stuff.
Yeah. Well, thank you for everything, Choo Choo, Mathieu-Baum. Just a symbol. For another symbol for the Hinkie era, that is gone. But like, credit to Brian Colangelo for making a very hinky trade and throwing and using Choo Choo as the guy to do it.
Yeah, well, they got there. People were mad because like they're like Hinkie would have gotten a second round pick, but I don't think in this market he would have. I think they just got the money back that they used to used with Saric's buyout.
Yeah.
So I'm not mad about it, especially, you know, the Sixers can still, they still have plenty of cap space left if a trade comes around where they need to absorb salary, which I don't think it will, but it's just, hey, we'll get that money. It's fine. It's as much as the whole building relationships element of that Hinkie declined to do, apparently, bugs me. I think it's a worthless, mostly worthless thing. If you have stuff that people want and they have stuff that you want, then good. But it's fine. Hopefully people are like, okay, the Sixers took on salary and got some money and it's great. Bye-bye.
You know, one thing that I think I had brought up, I'm sure I brought up in a couple of different podcasts, but we haven't addressed, and I think is John Hill, is that the guy you know on Twitter?
Yeah.
And he brought up, I had mentioned that Dario and Furkan Aldemir had the same European agent a while ago, and they overpaid Furkan Aldemir. Mm-hmm. And you sort of wonder if the commission that agent would get on that giant Furkan Aldemir contract could be used as part of Dario's half of his buyout. And he brought that up, right? And we will never know, and I'm sure things like that go on all the time. But I was told early on when they gave him that contract to look at who else that guy represented. And it was obviously Dario. And I think Micić, and I think there's another guy that he represents as well.
Well,
too.
Yeah, it's Luau and Korkmaz.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know.
Misko Raznatovic.
He's
integral to the Sixers construction.
That's all I'll say on that one. So I have a couple other things here. So we have the cereal stuff, and there was an article on, I just wanted to run these trades by real quick Jonathan Sharks did on The Ringer.
Yeah, I saw that article. I was sort of disheartened by it, but would still probably do most of them.
Yeah, I was just going to run the trades, but I was heartened by it in that he's basic. Sometimes we get too involved and we're scared they're going to trade Nerlens, but his like intro was like, look, they basically have to trade Okafor. He's the one that you have to trade. And sometimes I just think, wait a minute, if we know that and he knows that, Brian Colangelo might know that too.
I think the idea that Jahlil has been with the team, like playing golf in Vegas and hanging out and being buds, and Nerlens being like,
but maybe that's
at DeMarcus Cousins' pottery class is not great.
I don't know. Maybe they're trying to make it look like, I don't know. And no, the other thing,
I think Nerlens is so gone. I think he's not going to play another game for the Sixers.
Another thing about Jonathan Sharks, good writer, good podcaster, sounds a little bit like a robot. I don't know if you've heard him.
I agree. I have heard him, and I agree.
Yeah, he sounds like a robot. Okay.
But
he's enjoy his writing, enjoy his podcasting. All right, here are the trades. If in case you hadn't read to read it, this is on theringer.com. It's called Jahlil Okafor Can Still Thrive But Not in Philly. All right, first one was the Knicks for Kyle O'Quinn and a future first.
No.
I would do it in a second. All right.
But first of all, they can't trade a pick for like 4 years.
Well, they could trade a 2018, couldn't they?
I don't think so.
Why not? Unless it's already traded.
I think there's a pick. I think they have a pick going out. I don't know. I'm not looking at it, but
okay.
But and Kyle O'Quinn is another big guy who I don't want. I wouldn't make that trade right now.
Okay.
If no other trades exist, and you're just like, hey, an unprotected first round pick, maybe, but in 3 years, two, 3 years, whatever, I wouldn't do that trade. That's bullshit.
Okay, Bulls for Denzel Valentine and Dougie McBuckets.
I would do that, yeah.
Yeah, and I would also love to turn positive on McBuckets. I would do that in a second. I wouldn't hate
I don't know that would McBuckets would make this team.
Pelicans for Buddy Hield.
I don't think New Orleans does that. That was one where I was just like, there's no way that New Orleans is trading that. So I decline to even consider.
Though it's sort of an interesting fit next to Anthony Davis. It's not terrible, right? I mean, that's who you have to pair Anthony Davis with, right? I mean, do you have to pair Okafor with as a guy who can protect the rim and shoot?
Yeah, but don't you want Davis playing five?
No, I think they want Davis playing four.
That's bizarre to me.
Yeah.
Sure. They want to do, if they want to do it, I would do it. I don't like Buddy Hield that much, but I would do it just to get the logjam out of the way because we're dealing from a position of weakness.
To the Timberwolves for Zach LaVine or Chris Dunn, and you'd
any of it. Yeah. Or Ricky Rubio, any of it. Yeah. Any of it at all.
And I would take, honestly, I would take on Pekovic and let him rot away on the bench to get it done.
Yeah. And give them Landry to make the salaries match. That'd be fine. I'd be fine to have just like a big bully underneath to, like, if anybody touches Embiid, he just comes in and just punches him.
And then finally to Boston for your choice of Terry Rozier, Demetrius Jackson, James Young, RJ Hunter, Marcus Thornton, Gershon Yabusele, Ben Bentle, Jordan Mickey, and Ante Zizic.
Yeah, a couple of those guys in the first round pick. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Okay. All right. So to go to Serial real quick. So Adnan Syed is going to get, we talked about Serial a while ago, and here was just my thought on it. So he's going to get another trial, right?
I need to ask you a question first before
you
start.
Okay.
Have you listened, has the only Serial medium that you've consumed is the podcast Serial?
No. Well, I listened to the first two episodes of the other one.
Undisclosed?
Undisclosed, yeah.
Okay. So I'm, because now I'm writing for this lawyer comedy true crime show, I've been consuming like a ton of true crime.
Okay.
Bill James actually has a very good book, Bill James, the Bass Horror book.
Dude, the Bill James chapter on JFK is awesome. I don't know if you've read that yet.
I haven't gotten there yet, but okay. I'm reading a book called Popular Crime. It's really, really good.
Yeah.
So I'm reading that. I'm rewatching all the like Making a Murderer stuff just to pull stories from all the stuff. But so I'm listening to Undisclosed now, and I'm like, six episodes in or something, and they basically invalidate the entire podcast Serial based on saying, yo, nobody remembers the right day. There wasn't a wrestling match that night. So everyone is, the people that are just misremembering stuff left and right. There's things that they didn't test. There's people that they didn't talk to. It invalidates, like, they basically say, yo, Serial did a great job with what they were working with. It's a great podcast, but all of it's wrong.
Well, but first of all, I think Undisclosed is done by like Adnan Syed's legal team. So
no, two impartial bloggers who think that the police and the prosecution did a really bad job. But then also, yeah, a family friend of Adnan. But
yeah,
the bloggers are impartial and they disagree on the podcast all the time.
Well, so here's what I would say about that is that that is ultimately the problem with all of it. I what it comes down to for me is there's no way he's going to get convicted because everyone's memory was blurry when it happened. Like most people's memory would be blurry about if I asked you what happened even 2 weeks ago on a certain day.
They didn't talk to people until 3 weeks later.
Yeah, like it's almost impossible. Started. Yeah.
Exactly.
But I guess what I would also say is and even like even the whole Asia McClain thing, at this point, she is so into being the witness that no one talked to, is like she remembers it better than you would remember yesterday at this point somehow.
She might be misremembering the different day. We don't know.
Right. I think she says something about there being an ice storm that day and there was no ice storm that day. So I think her remember – but ultimately it comes down to this for me is that – there is a way in which there is not enough information to convict him and also to think, look, he probably did it. I just can't – it ultimately comes down to why did Jay say that all of that stuff happened unless Jay did it and was trying to frame him or they were both involved somehow. There's not – to me, there's not like a third – option.
Well, there was a guy. So 6 months earlier or so, another, and I agree with what you said.
Yeah.
I think that is likely the case that they definitely shouldn't have convicted him. There's definitely some police misconduct and horrible lawyering, but he also still could have done it. But like 6 months earlier at Woodlawn High School, another girl went missing.
Right.
Beforehand and was killed by this like serial like strangler person, and they have only found that out like a couple years after Adnan's trial. So that it was this guy that did it, who was doing that. So it's like, that's a character that wasn't brought up or wasn't possible. It just seemed like they didn't interview. It seemed like they had Jay talked to him early and was like, yo, this guy did it. And they just like lasered in on Adnan and just tried to build a case around Adnan without like talking to all the people that they needed to talk to first.
Right.
And I'm sure there was some, you know, it's 1999 in Baltimore. Like, there's definitely some like racial stereotyping that goes into Adnan as this, you know, Muslim, not different looking kid that they were like, you don't know. But it's tough because everybody's memory is wrong.
Right.
And you just can't know what happened. And all you can take is, hey, look at Jay. His story changed all the time. The police were absolutely coercing him into saying what they needed him to say and changing his story as needed. And he admitted to lying about everything left and right. And so if that's the case, couldn't he lie about the whole thing?
Right.
It seemed like a lot of lies built on a lot of other lies. And the timeline, the prosecution's timeline just didn't work. He still could have done it. I don't think he did. But based on like the wealth of just misinformation that's out there, like there's no way that he should have gotten convicted.
Right.
Or will get convicted again.
Yeah, I think our legal system errs on letting a innocent person go rather than convicting letting a guilty person go rather than convicting an innocent person. That's sort of, you know, that's why you have to prove that he didn't do it. You have to prove that he did do it. He doesn't have to prove that he didn't. That's essentially what it comes down to.
Do you put any stock in the fact that it's been now 17 years and he's stayed true to his story and said, man, no, I didn't do it. Did you put any stock in that, like human on a human level?
No.
You don't think at some point you'd be like, oh, fuck it, I did it. Okay, whatever.
No, I guess I just think that if you are able to kill somebody, look, I think humans are probably, you and I are probably more capable of doing something heinous at the wrong moment, at the wrong time than we would think, you know?
Oh, definitely. I'm capable of doing some bad shit, Spike. I'm ready to go.
So I'm not going to say because he killed somebody, that means he is supremely evil and so on and so forth. But what I would say is if I can believe in a world in which he jealous murdered his girlfriend, then I can also believe in a world in which he lied about it for 20 years.
I don't see a motive there. I really don't see one at all. I think they dated, they seemed to be friends. They were asking each other for like, he could get rides home still. It's high school. Like, you date people, you stop dating them. She was like very into this guy that she dated for like 3 weeks. Like, there's so many missing threads that like, there's just, I think that they heard that Jay said, yo, he did it.
But why did Jay say he did it then?
He's covering up for him. Maybe somebody else that he... maybe this other guy, like Jay is like, why would he change his story 600 times then?
Well,
like he could have done it and also like tried to frame a guilty man when he was like, he's already guilty. Let's like frame the evidence to make him look more guilty. But I think there's too many things missing that I'd err on the side of it's all bullshit and everyone's remembering different days. And once you have the bias in your head of, okay, this guy's a killer, then like, things start coming out. The idea of just getting convicted for something, just getting accused of something makes you guilty in a lot of people's minds.
When I listen to him, he doesn't sound like a... I will say that I don't... When I listen to him in Serial, he sounds genuine to me. He doesn't seem like an evil guy, or he doesn't seem like he was misleading. He seems genuine. You know what the movie ending to this is? The movie ending to this is he gets off, they let him out, and because they can't try him again, he just goes, ha, I did it. And that's it. Moves to another country, and that's it.
But we could talk about this forever. But, yeah. I mean, the fact that the cops like definitely tailored Jay's story makes me question everything. And where the car was located, like there's all this scientific data in Undisclosed where they talk about how there's no way that she was in the car for that long and then buried at this time, and it just doesn't make any sense. So I think with all that put together, I err on the side of it's probably just all bullshit and they framed him, rather than all of it, it did happen, and then they just decided, okay, let's do all this wrong stuff and possibly get caught for it, even though he's guilty.
I know it's not admissible, but did they ever put him under a lie detector?
They didn't put him under a lie detector, I don't believe. They put the guy who discovered him, who they called Mr. S, I believe, on the podcast.
They put him
under two lie detectors. The first lie detector, he failed. And the second lie detector, they asked him like very specific, like leading questions so he would succeed, and he passed. Which is very bizarre. And they had like an expert on Undisclosed to say that's not how you should do a lie detector. It just seemed like everybody across the board was like, yo, this is wrong. And because of Christina Gutierrez's like incompetence in a bunch of ways, and the police just sort of like fudging things, they got the conviction out of nowhere.
If it was on pay-per-view and Adnan Syed was going to take a lie detector and the result, would you pay $100 to watch that pay-per-view?
Easily. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. No question. Also, you should watch The Night Of.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. I enjoyed it.
You did watch it. Okay, yeah.
Well, it was on HBO Go for about 3 weeks before it was.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, the first episode, which actually, it was good for something to watch. Val and I watched it, but then it just meant even longer till you have to wait to the second episode.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I'm excited to do like one episode at a time stuff. It's, you know, it's very old school. It's a throwback.
And speaking and final, I guess, final thing about TV is congratulations to Andy Greenwald, who is now hosting the Mr. Robot post show, and has now gone from when I was on late night on WIP, I used to have him on talking about Mad Men, and that was like his major media exposure. And now he is hosting post shows for Game of Thrones and Mr. Robot. It's worked out pretty well for Andy Greenwald. So congratulations.
Not bad at all. Oh yeah, I'm looking at the Warren Croxton Sam Hinkie shirt.
It's great, isn't it?
I like this Spike and Mike do true crime.
Yeah, well, so somebody had brought up, I had two people brought up actually, this is what I was going to bring up to you before the jigsaw, that one of the things that we did in our first downtime was to do relationship advice. Now that we have more listeners, do you want to try relationship advice for the next couple months again?
Yeah, let's do it. Okay. It feels like a good off-season-y thing.
Maybe I will. So right now, if you just want to, you can email me your relationship advice questions if you want. I'll set up an email box for it, and we'll tweet it out. But if you can find my email address, send me the question. But we'll do one or two relationship advice questions every podcast until the season starts. We'll see how it goes. But
great.
And that Bill James book, I would recommend. Definitely read the JFK thing because there's a theory in there I didn't really know about that seems like the best theory that there is, like the
Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah, the best non-Lee Harvey Oswald theory. So,
all right, I'm into it.
Do you want a jigsaw?
Real quick, let's do it.
Okay.
Play.
I will play this game.
Game play.
I will play this game.
I miss you.
I will play this game.
I'm worried. Play.
I will play this game.
And after the game, they were interviewing him, and they said, how does it feel to win the ultimate game? And he said, if it's the ultimate game, why are they playing it again next year?
All right, Mike, here are your two choices. Your first choice is, for the rest of your life, you have to get a new tattoo once a month. This tattoo must be at least 3 inches by 3 inches in diameter. You will be able to pick whatever you want the tattoo to be, but it can't be something in which, like, you get skin-colored tattoo on you. It has to be an actual tattoo. So that's one per month for the rest of your life. Or you are deaf. You don't hear anything ever again.
One tattoo the rest of my life.
Yes.
Every week, you said?
Every month.
One tattoo a month, 3x3.
Yes.
Can be anything I want.
Yes.
Does it hurt more? Is it like a regular tattoo pain? Because I'm not a big needle guy.
Regular tattoo pain. It hurts more in some places than in others.
Sure.
I can tell you that.
So theoretically, within a year, definitely 3 years, my whole body will be covered in tattoos.
I don't know what the square inchage on a person is, but, eventually. Maybe if not 3 years, then 8 years. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I have... Yeah, 8 years would be a lot of tattoos. That's tough, and it's the rest of my life. Like, I'm gonna be 68 and finding a 3x3 inch on my body, place on my body, to get another tattoo.
Yeah, or you just tattoo over something that was there before.
Yeah, I feel like it'll come to that very quickly.
And just to throw this in there, you can't just get the same by 3x3 tattooed over and over again in the same spot. I know. Okay. Somebody will say, like, the purpose of the jigsaw is not to find a way around doing what you're supposed to do. It's, yeah.
I have to cover my body in tattoos for the rest of my life once a month.
Basic.
Or death.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, thanks. I think I feel like I've been on a roll.
Because there's a simplicity to just being like, death.
Yep. Can't hear.
But then you couldn't listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
And that'd be the biggest loss of all.
Yeah.
All right. I will say that because the tattoos.
Wow. Dude. I thought you'd pick deaf.
Tattoos for the podcast.
Holy smokes. I love it. All right. We'll be back with you next week. This has been the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, brought to you by LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged. 707 Walnut, always at llpavorsky.com. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah, you know Lick Face.